hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air performance number 655. I'm Lisa Sheps, and I am joined telephonically by my lovely co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live as we do on Wednesdays at koop.org. Please do not go away. We'll be right back.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and rage.
It is Wednesday, February 9th, 2022. On the show today, we have Austin Shakespeare and their production of The Glass Menagerie. And later on, we'll be talking to City Theater and their show Moments, a Stephen Sondheim celebration. And of course, we will have lively discussions of the world of theater in New York, Austin, Chicago, Dallas, Fort Worth, and the greater Metroplex area. Stick with us. It's true for you. It is.
But not for me.
But not for me. That was the incomparable Ariana DeBose singing from the movie of West Side Story, which we're going to talk about in just a second. But before I do that, I need to thank Kim Simpson for another incredible international folk bazaar. It was actually kind of sad today as I was driving in and listening. I got a little teary-eyed.
You know what? Emotions are good. It means we're still working like humans and feeling things, so
right.
That's a good thing.
I'm just going to say that's a matter of opinion.
Well, I'd be worried if you didn't feel sad ever. I'd be like, you're just cold-hearted.
Well, there'll be...
Paul Abdul likes to sing about that cold-hearted thing, yeah. So what can I tell you?
There will be sadness next week, I'll tell you that for sure.
Yeah, I know.
The Oscars nominations came out. And one of those nominations was Best Supporting Actor, Miss Ariana DeBose of West Side Story. And that's why I played that song.
Yes, there was a lot of anger that Rachel was not nominated at all.
You mean the girl that played Maria?
Yeah, and
yeah, there was a lot of people that didn't like her.
Yeah, I know. I was all like, yeah, I don't think that's awful, but I saw some rage. I was like, whoa, okay.
Yeah, I didn't see any of that because,
I think that Ariana enjoyed it. Deserved it.
As you may or may not know, I do not follow social media, so I don't see any of the rage, unless it's in a newspaper article, which I didn't see. Anyway, West Side Story had a whole bunch of nominations. Best Costume Design, Best Sound, Best Cinematography, Best Production Design, and Best Picture.
Those are some bests.
Those are some bests. Other Broadway-type people in Oscar nominations was Andrew Garfield in Tick, Tick, Boom. I did not like the movie as much as others did, but I did like his performance.
I have to tell you what I found a whole bunch of clips of how they were shooting everything because they started... when COVID protocols were so stringent and then things got a little looser and watching them shoot in the oh my God, what's the name of the diner? The when they're shooting in the diner,
yeah.
And how the walls come down and using all the, having like Andre DeShields and all the different people come in. It was fascinating watching that. And I found that way more exciting than the movie. And
agreed.
But I found the music even more exciting that way, watching it all happen. It was pretty spectacular.
I am not a big fan of the music in Tick, Tick, Boom, but there you go. Denzel Washington was nominated for The Tragedy of Macbeth, which I could not watch.
Denzel Washington just needs to be nominated for everything.
That's
he's
true.
Just one of those people that really just nominate him for everything.
Yeah.
So awesome.
Tragedy of Macbeth also got Best Production Design. Somebody named Lin-Manuel Miranda got nominated once again for Best Song for Encanto. And if he gets it, that will be an EGOT.
I know. And he just said that he's looking about making that movie into a musical.
Yeah, I heard that. I don't know how I feel about that. But
I was a little... Okay, thank you for that. Fun fact, I cracked my tooth and had to go to the dentist. My dentist's last name is Hamilton. I never noticed until I looked up on the wall.
First name is Alex?
His middle name is Alexander. And okay. I was like, Alexander Hamilton.
I was very happy to see, and I don't want to talk a lot about films because that's not why we're here. But Coda, which is the film by the deaf screenwriter and deaf actors, and I thought was just wonderful. Movie is also nominated. I believe it's nominated for Best Film as well.
That's exciting.
Yeah. And then what I don't understand, I don't know if you saw Licorice Pizza, but I went to go see Licorice Pizza. Not a fan of Licorice Pizza, but it got a lot of nominations.
The actual dish or the movie?
The movie. Actually, and somebody can explain this to me, and maybe I missed it, but nowhere in the film that I saw I cannot figure out the title other than trying to just freak us out because there was nothing in the movie about pizza, about licorice on pizza. Didn't see it.
I will go down a rabbit hole and answer that at a later time, Lisa. And
that'd be great. Don't do it in today's episode, please.
No, I'm not doing it in today's story. I'm just letting you know I put that on my agenda of things to do to solve the riddle for you.
Cool. So we had a few openings this this week. One on Broadway, one off Broadway, and there was actually three. And then one, I don't know what Encores is considered, but I think it's considered off Broadway. But anyway, I want to start with Broadway, which is Prayer for the French Republic, which looks amazing. It's it takes place in two different time eras, like the current time zone or current time and close to World War II. And it's about, I'm searching for it on my computer and it's not popping up. It's about the, there it is. Nazi Germany in France. Did they like it? Gave it three thumbs up and two middle of the roads and zero thumbs down. But it's really... Zero thumbs down.
Mm-hmm.
This was written by Joshua Harmon, and it was at the Manhattan Theater Club and directed by David Comer. It just looked really interesting. Elizabeth Vincentelli's review was good. I wouldn't call it a super-duper rave, but it's good. But it talks about this family that their Jewish ancestry comes that is... You know, there's Sephardic Jews and Ashkenazic Jews. Ashkenazic Jews are Jews coming from Eastern Europe, and Sephardic Jews are coming from Spain and North Africa. And evidently, there's a lot of difference between them. Most of us here in the United States are Ashkenazic Jews, as I am. So, I don't know. It's interesting. It looks...
I was about to say, that's all very interesting to me. I wish you could see my face. I was taking in all of that, Lisa,
yeah.
You were telling me.
It looks like a good time. The only thing that I don't like about it is it says the running time is 3 hours. It's a long time. If you want to see it at the City Center, you got to get there before February 27th.
Oh, that's coming up.
Yes. And like...
2 weeks? You got a little over 2 weeks.
2 weeks, 3 weeks. Now, I remember when the Tap Dance Kid opened in 1983. I was like, that was right in the middle of my New York experience. But I never got to see it. Did you ever see it?
Yes, when I was younger.
Pretty sure Gregory Hines was in it?
Gregory Hines was in it. Yes. So was Alfonso Rivero. So was Dooley Hill.
I didn't realize Dooley Hill was in the 83 production. He must have been 12.
I think they all came in at different parts.
Oh, he would have been the kid.
The kids.
Yeah, yeah. Perfect.
I'm talking about these as a kid. The Rasavion Lover was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Dooley Hill was a kid. Alfonso Ribeiro was a kid. Someone else big was a kid. I believe I saw Dooley Hill when I saw it.
Yeah. Well, this review by Jesse Green was not terribly flattering to this production, or really the show itself. And he talks about the tap dance kid is never sure which members of the Sheridan family it's about, as the focus changes every 10 minutes. It's just one of the oddities afflicting this totally bewildering but intermittently appealing 1983 musical. So this was done at Encores at City Center, and Encores does, they spend a week rehearsing and a week showing. So it's very quick rehearsal. And according to the review by Jesse Green, they probably could have dealt with some more rehearsal because he said it seemed a bit rough. It's got a score by Henry Krieger and Robert Lorick. And it's interesting. Oh, by the way, it was also directed by Kenny Leone. Can't really go wrong with that.
No, I was about to say, come on now, Kenny Leone.
But it says it's, a musical is a tricky thing to write, in that you've got to, you know, the music tends to come out of, a lot of times the characters just have so much to say that they can only say it by singing, and it's got to just come out. In this case, it says there's times and you don't know why someone is singing or dancing, and other times you do but wish that you didn't. So, and the original production, 83, was taking place in the present, but this time they made it take place in 1956, which said it made a lot more sense because a lot of the references, for instance, the mother gets mad at the daughter for wearing pants, which wouldn't happen in today's world.
No, not now.
So they said it in 1956, which helped in some things, but did not help in others. And I'm trying to remember, see if I wrote down the reason why. Yeah, I didn't write it down. But he said it worked in for some things and did not work in others. The choreography, by the way, was by Jared Grimes. And it sounds interesting. I mean, I've always wanted to see the Tap Dance Kid. I wish I saw it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to watch the dancing because it's the Tap Dance Kid. But, you know, that's just me.
It's you and a lot of other people.
Yeah.
And the final opening we had was in off-Broadway. It's called Tambo and Bones, which one of the podcasts I listened to said it was filled with a lot of controversy, and I didn't really get it out of reading the review, but basically it was saying it was loved by the white audience members and not so much by the audience members of color. By virtue of the name, you might have figured out that it deals with a satirical minstrel show. And this was done by Playwrights Horizons and Center Theater Group. It was written by Dave Harris. And it's done in three sections. One is a minstrel show with Tambo and Bones. And the second, it's described as a hip-hop triptych.
And I was about to say, the hip-hop, you got to get into the hip-hop.
Yeah, well, that was the second. That was not the first. Yeah. So that was the second. And then it doesn't tell you what the third is because it didn't want to give anything away. But it has a lot to do with race and the economy and capitalism. And I'm not 100% sure why audiences of color weren't crazy about it. So I didn't have time to read more about it. I'm sorry about that. But actually, if you're reading the review who wrote the review? Maya Phillips. I would want to go see it. It's directed by Taylor Reynolds. And the one thing it does say is it says Tambo and Bones ends abruptly with no bows. And I have a kind of a problem with that.
Yeah.
Would you like to hear my problem?
I knew that. I was like, oh, Lisa wouldn't like that.
Well, I don't like it because the bows is a chance for the actors to take credit for the work that they just did as actors. I don't like it when they make the bows part of the show, if you will.
Yeah, I know that. So, I don't know if I don't think this is really the spoiler. I mean, I know what the third part is, but they have to go through this whole, these three parts, is that they're trying to find a solution to, of capitalism, greed, like where everything like mm-hmm. intersects. And basically they're trying to find the source and kill all their troubles. So, take what I say with how you want to say it. And so it's about, so the way it ends, I get it. It would kind of shift. But then you're like, you should have a bow.
I think.
Get it.
Although,
and I don't get
yeah,
it.
Although I could change my mind about that. I could see wanting the audience to leave with a certain amount of discomfort.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
I think they do. I think you do, even with or without the bows, is yeah. the point of it. But
okay. Well, we have just a couple more minutes in this section. I got 7,000 things that I want to talk about.
7,000 things to chat about.
Yep. 7,000 things to everything. Let's just go to The Color Purple movie. And that Danielle Brooks and Fantasia Taylor, who I don't know, are playing Celia and Sophie.
So we talked about Fantasia a lot because I saw Fantasia in After Midnight with Dooley Hill.
Okay.
Speaking of Dooley Hill.
Cool. Anyway, so they were really set. And Danielle Brooks got the... Oprah Winfrey told her herself on a Zoom meeting, which I thought was sort of cute.
Yeah. Fantasia has played this role
yes,
on
I know.
Broadway.
I know. I just don't know her. I'm sorry. Yeah. I wish I did, but I don't. So it's going to be... What? Go ahead.
We did have a whole conversation.
I'm sure we did, but I don't know her.
You had forgotten.
I'm sure we did, but just because we talk about something doesn't mean I know them. Okay, and they'll join a whole host of other people, including Taraji P. Henson, which I don't understand, playing Shug Every, and of course, Coleman Domingo is also going to be in it, and he is playing Mister.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So that's groovy. It's going to be released in 2023. Let's see. What else do we want to talk? So just very quickly, don't want to spend a whole bunch of time on it, but once again, Smash raises its ugly head.
It's kind of like Rebecca in a way without the fire.
Exactly. But they're talking about doing another, they're looking for a Broadway opening in 2024 with workshops starting this summer. So,
well, you know what? They can have a conversation with us in 2023 because I think this is like the seventh round of workshops that are supposed to be coming.
I agree. And then I did like this talking about, I don't know if you saw this, about Dead Outlaw, the musical, which were the David Yazbek, one of the band's visit writers, is going to do. And it's based on a bizarre true story of a carnival corpse, which is, I don't know, did you see this?
Mm-mm.
All right, I'm going to read what they say right here. So it's about a man named Elmer J. McCurdy. This is true. He was a bank robber, a bank and trainer robber in the late 19th and 20th century who died in a 1911 shootout with police in Oklahoma. His corpse
isn't that how everybody went down in that day and age?
That's true. His corpse was mummified and displayed at a funeral home and then became a carnival and sideshow attraction from the 20s to the 60s. By the 19th...
Like Weekend at Bernie's.
Exactly. By the 1970s, the corpse, which was thought to be a mannequin, was on display as a gallows exhibit at the Pike Amusement Park in Long Beach, California, when a film crew shooting a episode of The $6 Million Man damaged the body, exposing human bone. Okay.
Okay, $6 Million Man is not where I expected you to come in.
Me neither. That's why I want to see this.
And now I have sound effects.
Boop, 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 boop.
I loved that show.
Me too. And its spinoff, The $6 Million Woman.
Bionic Woman.
Okay, and finally, I want to say that there's going to be a concert version of Anyone Can Whistle. The Sondheim Show with, I believe we've already learned that Elizabeth Stanley and Santino Fontana are going to be in it, but now it's we know that Vanessa Williams and Elizabeth Stanley, oh, we already talked about Elizabeth Stanley, Vanessa Williams is going to be joining.
We could talk about Vanessa Williams all the time.
Yeah. So that's cool. Anyone can
that's
whistle.
Cool.
That's what they say. Easy.
We really have to keep, Dead Outlaw needs to be our new spot watcher.
I think you
that
might be.
And Bonging It, we just need to, the two of them, those need to be our watch, 2022 watch.
I think you're right. We're going to take a little break right now. We're going to listen to a song from Anyone Can Whistle. And then we're going to come back and talk to Austin Shakespeare. Here we go. This is a song, There Won't Be Trumpets. It's one of my favorites.
There won't be.
Okay, Nicole, we're going to introduce our next guest. We've got to do it quickly because we're running behind schedule. Surprise! We're gonna talk to co-host Ann Chickalella, and actor phenom Mark Puhey about the Glass Meningery.
Or Zooey what?
Well, you're gonna hear all about it in the interview. So let's just go to it, shall we?
Yeah.
Here it is. That was not it. Darn this new system of ours. Actually, that was totally operator error. Here we go. I'm fortunate enough to have very, very dear friends like family here in the Zoom room from Austin Shakespeare and their production of Zuiloico de Cristal. I have the lovely co-host, Miss Ann Chickalella.
Thank you, Lisa.
And we have the incomparable Mark Puhey. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Lisa. How you doing?
So did you see what I did there? I called it Zuiloico de Cristal, which is the Spanish version, which I did in Central and South America in 1980.
Wow.
I know. I will tell this little story before we get going.
Sure.
So when you're in other countries and they have their, in this particular country, the English-speaking newspaper was talking about our tour, and they said Repertorio Español is coming, and they're doing La Celestina, Los Fantásticos, and Tennessee Williams Crystal Zoo. But you guys are doing the Glass Menagerie. And if people don't know the story, could you tell them a little bit about it?
Sure. Tennessee Williams, this is early in his career, and he is an acclaimed 20th century playwright. But he's looking back at his life as a young man, and Mark can tell you more about his character because he's playing Tom, which is sort of the prototype for looking back at his family and how he really left his family. And we sort of know that's going to happen throughout, but it's how it happens. And all of us can probably tell stories about that time when we became our own persons. But mm-hmm. in this case, you know, he's working in a shoe warehouse and he comes home, and mainly it's about being home. And he has an incredible sister who has some disability, but she is a special person and he really loves her. And he knows that when he leaves, he's sort of leaving her with the mother, and the mother is a little wild. She's a very bubbly character, but she can be mean. And she wants control, and she thinks she's doing it for the good of her children. So it is a short play, and Williams originally wanted it to be a one act, and they had him flesh it out for Broadway as a full-length play. And then there is a visiting character who she refers to as the gentleman caller. And Jim is his actual name. And we have a wonderful actor. Ken is playing that role. And Mark can tell you a little bit more about their relationship. But that's basically the story, is a memory play of thinking back to when you really broke off from your family. Now, the truth is, Tennessee Williams himself was connected to his family all his life.
Right.
But there was a time when he left home and he went to New York. And he wanted to be in the theater, even though he didn't know much about the theater. He just, as they say, broke in.
Right. And of course, we know Tennessee Williams is writing really wonderful female characters. throughout his career. No offense to Tom, Mark. I'm sure Tom is great, but we tend to remember Laura and Mom. And Mom is played by Fran Dorn, right?
Yes.
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah, perfect. And this, and in this version, our family is an African American family. So, Mark, tell us about Tom. Tell us about the show itself from your perspective.
Sure, sure. This is actually my second time playing in the Glass Menagerie. The first time I played as Jim, the gentleman caller, it was back in 2006, I believe, with Austin Shakespeare. But Jim is very much a character that's, you know, described as the most realistic part of this memory play. And he was kind of an outsider looking in and came in and did his little bit and left. And that's how I played it. It was really interesting to look at the dynamic of the family and the actors who were playing the family back then. But now having matured and playing Tom, even though they're the same age in the play, but with 15 years of experience, I just have, I'm truly enjoying this go around. And seeing Tom's dynamic with both Laura, his sister, and Amanda, his mother, and the exchanges between Tom and Amanda are some of the most intense and fascinating exchanges in American playwriting. So I'm really looking forward to that. And Fran Dorn is playing Amanda, and I've been trying to act with her for 20 years. So.
Awesome. And now you get your chance.
Exactly. Yeah.
And who are the other actors in the show?
Kaylee Sykes McDuff and Kenna Benefield, two fantastic young actors. Kaylee and I were actually both in Christmas Carol at Zach.
Wonderful, at Zach.
A couple months ago, yeah. She played Scrooge's younger sister, so we had that connection there as well.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Awesome. And Kenna Benefield is indeed wonderful. He, I don't know if he made his premiere in Austin at a show that was done at Ground Floor Theater, but he did play Ground Floor Theater, and a show directed by Simone Alexander. Well, this sounds like fun. You know, and you say it's one of the shortest. I have not seen Glass Menagerie in quite a while or have read it in in my mind, it's not short, but it is short. What's the running? What's the running time?
It's about an hour and a half. So we'll do it in two parts, and we'll have a 7:30 start, and we'll have an intermission, and then we'll come back. Mainly, it's the gentleman caller scene that you come back to, but it's very satisfying. And as you know, Lisa, we have talkbacks.
Yes.
So it'll be very interesting after the show to stay with the actors, hear what the audiences have to say.
Wonderful. And this is billed as a staged reading. How staged is it going to be?
Well, we do our stage reading with script in hand.
Uh-huh.
But it is amazing how quickly that goes out of your mind.
Sure.
You know, the actors are so good that the scripts sort of go away. But they're in costume. Aaron Kubicek has done the costumes. And we'll have projections by Lowell Bartholomew, which are great. Mark has a photo of himself as playing his father in the projection of his father.
Oh, uh-huh.
And we got some pictures of Fran as a young woman to show Amanda in her youth in some of those projections.
Oh,
so
wow.
they're really fun. And we have a live violinist. So Benny Braswell, who's done this for us a little bit before, is doing more and more with us. So she is on stage with them playing solo violin, and that's quite
wonderful.
Will
it be done as an underscore or more transitional music?
No, he calls for it, meaning Williams will say, and then this kind of music comes in.
Oh, okay.
So you're right, Lisa. It has a little bit more of an underscoring quality, almost like a movie.
That's wonderful. It sounds amazing. And are y'all doing this at the Rollins?
We are back at the Long Center, very happy to be together. We had a wonderful time in November with the Bollywood 12th Night. And now we're back February 17 to 20, just one weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 7:30, Sunday at 3, at our home at the Rollins, yes.
That is wonderful, wonderful news. And where can folks go to get more information about this show?
They can come to either austinshakespeare.org, but also they can go directly to thelongcenter.org. We have info in both those locations.
There's lots of info, lots of options. So, Anne, after Groth's Menagerie, what's happened to the future of Austin Shakespeare? What's going on?
Well, we are really revving up again, Lisa. You know, you do a lot of work, and as you know, we produce a lot. We'll be doing Agatha Christie's The Hollow.
Yay.
At that new space at KMFA. We've been trying to do this for 2 years, but there's a... I keep calling it their studio, and that makes people think it's a recording studio, but no, it's a performance studio. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty nice space. And we'll just do one day on a Saturday of Helen Marino will be the main character in Agatha Christie's The Hollow. So a wonderful.
That sounds like a lot of fun. When is that?
I think it's March 6th, if that's the Sunday. Yeah.
Great. That's right. And it's going to be here right around the corner.
I know.
Mark, do you have anything in the future you want to talk about?
I'll be in War of the Worlds. It's an adaptation by Jarrett King. It'll be at Penfold Theater, but I think we might be at your place.
You are at Ground Floor Theater for that, yes.
Yeah, that's right. We've actually been putting this off since before the pandemic. So
I know you did. I saw the virtual.
Yeah. So I'm excited about that happening. And, after that, as short film projects come along or anything else, we try and squeeze those in when they can fit. But yeah.
Well, that is wonderful. I'm looking forward to seeing all of the above and looking forward to see The Glass Menagerie, or as Nick Mayo likes to call it, The Glass Meningry, which is what he used to call it as a kid. And of course, I always call it Zui Loico de Cristal. So Anne Ciccolella and Mark Puhey, thank you so much for joining us again on Offstage and On the Air.
We're so lucky to be on your show.
13 years and counting.
Oh, I was going to ask you, 13 years. Congratulations. Thanks for giving all that time.
It's too crowded in the market. It's too jam-packed at the store. There's too many cars on the interstate. Tennessee's too busy anymore. It used to take a couple of minutes to get across.
Tennessee's too busy anymore.
Apparently.
That Tennessee Williams. Don't want to drive on him. Cool. I want to talk about some of the local stuff going on. I think the big news is, and you probably know more than me, but Elizabeth Chandler, the managing director of Zach for the past like 15 years, is stepping down.
She is. She's retiring in general and going on, figuring out the next chapter of her life. Her husband sold his business, and she's been spending more time in New Mexico, and he's retired now. And
yeah, and I didn't realize until I read the press release that she was a performer herself, a musical performer.
Yes. She's also a Jersey girl too.
Yeah, I'm in love with a Jersey girl. So she's responsible for taking, and Dave Stakely said that the Topfer would not have existed were it not for her. So that's a pretty big, that's high praise.
It is high praise. I know. I thought when he wrote that, I was like, well, hello. I mean, I would like someone to say something like that about me.
Me too.
I was like, all right. Yeah, she had the theater. She kept the theater in black pretty much for the entire time.
Yeah,
pretty
amazing.
Minus COVID year. That's a feat.
And brought it, I think, from a budget of like $6 million to a budget of $11 million annually. So that's a lot of growth.
Yeah, she did a lot of things. So
Bon voyage and mazel tov to her. And they're going to be...
So she plans on still coming back and supporting Zach and coming back for openings and enjoying the theater. And they're going to keep their apartment here. And you'll see her here and there. She feels that... it's time for her to do her next thing and for them to find some new blood.
There you go. Other things happening around town. Gaslight Baker out in Lockhart is doing the play that goes wrong. It's already open. It's directed by Beth James. It does not say anything about a cast list on their website, but it's playing now through the 19th at the Gaslight Baker, which is a theater I've always said I need to get to. I haven't yet.
Lisa, I've talked about Lockhart like 6 times this week, and I will totally go on a little field trip with you.
I would love to, but I won't
get to.
I would love to, but not with that show.
No, I didn't say we have to go at this moment. I'm just saying. Like,
I know.
I would love to one day. Let's do it.
I'm all for it. Coming up is, it looks like a band called the Presley Project, and they're doing God of Carnage in March.
Oh.
So that could be interesting. I like God of Carnage. For information, you may go to their website, mygbt.org. And then another thing I thought was interesting is Concordia University. I don't know why I did not hear about this. They're doing Death Do Us Part. Oh, and I just closed the window accidentally as a radio play on Facebook Live. And now I can't find the... oh, there it is. Till Death Do Us Part. And it's called CTX Theater, which I didn't... I guess that's the Concordia University thing. But they're doing it... two radio shows, which was from the old days, the TV series The Bickersons, which is on CBS, and Fibber McGee and Molly, which is on NBC. Those were both in... those are not on television, but they were radio plays. And they are going to do them, and I think you can call in, or there's some... it's done in Facebook, and I think you can text in. You know, you can make comments, and they'll respond to them. But it's done on Valentine's Day, February 14th, which is Monday, at 8 p.m. And for more information, I pulled this down off of Now Play in Austin. I didn't. I did it from ATX Theater, so which uses Broadway World's listings. But it looks like fun.
That does. That sounds interesting. I did not know about that.
Yeah, me neither until today. I have a little bit of extra time, so I'm going to take this time to go back, talk a little bit more Broadway. Beetlejuice is coming back. Now, I totally, my mind so forgets things. Beetlejuice.
You know why it is? Because we said Beetlejuice.
We did.
It came back.
We did. It got closed down just prior to the pandemic because of the stop clause, and Music Man was kicking them out
because
of their theater.
Music Man.
And
yeah.
If you remember, they did not do well when they first opened, and that's which triggered the stop clause, but then they started to do really well. So they're going to open this spring with Alex Brightman.
Yeah, and it's funny because I want to know where, because the whole thing of them not going to another theater after the stop clause.
They're
going to
be at the They're going to be at the Marquee Theater starting April 8th.
Right. I'm just saying, like, I find it all fascinating because remember the whole argument was our set, nothing will fit. We can't move it. It has to be in this the theater. And so that's why they were saying it had to be there.
They had 2 years to retrofit.
I know, but they were saying redoing the set. Which
I know, but they,
I'm just saying
they
from
did
what
it.
They said. But they were saying it would change it. Never mind. You're missing my point. I'm just laughing at them. I think it's great it's back, but I'm just laughing.
Cool. The other thing that's back starting on Valentine's Day is Sleep No More, which I so want to see.
Yeah.
You're not a Sleep No More fan?
No, I am. I just don't know. You know, I think the point of Sleep No More in a COVID world with restrictions just doesn't work as well.
They don't have that many restrictions. So they've got a new mask from their old mask, and it's made to fit over an N95. And then their only thing is they say, try to maintain distance from other people, which is virtually impossible in that show, from what I understand.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So then, like, I don't know. So you're worried about that. You're not enjoying the show. Like, I don't know. I just don't think it's made for restriction.
Yeah. I don't know. I would, so. I'd still do it. The Royal Shakespeare Company, and this surprises me, for the very first time, cast a disabled actor as Richard III.
You know, when they said it was the first time anyone was ever cast as Richard III, a disabled actor.
At Royal Shakespeare.
Really?
At Royal Shakespeare.
Oh, I thought it was in general, and I was like, what? Where?
No, it's the first time at Royal Shakespeare, but still.
But I'm still surprised at that, too.
Yeah, me too. Me too. It's playing this summer from June to October, directed by Gregory Dorn. And it's it just doesn't make sense that they haven't done it before, because
no, it doesn't.
Richard III is a disabled character.
Yeah, yeah. He was a disabled person.
Well, it's true. He was a disabled person. He was not only a character; he was a person.
He was real.
He was real, actually. And didn't we talk about they had either dug up his bones or they show his bones, and you can see the scoliosis and the deformity of the spine.
We talked about that. Gosh, we were still in studio then, so it must have been like 2019 or.
Oh, I think it. I think it was long before that, personally, but I don't know. I have a skewed version of history at this point.
Well, it is like Groundhog Day.
It is indeed, which we just had, and we're gonna have 6 more weeks of winter.
So the little groundhog said.
So they do. So let's look a little bit behind ourselves and see what's going on today in theater history.
Today in theater history, fun stuff happened.
Oh, I don't know if I told you, but when Simone Alexander was my co-host when you were not available, mm-hmm. when we did Today in Theater History, she did your Today in Theater History song.
Yes, I know, because that made me very excited. I love Simone.
Yeah.
Today in Theater History.
So as folks know, we get this from Playbill's Vault, just to give credit where credit is due. So we'll start in 1865. I was just a young person back there. It is the birthday of Beatrice Stellar Tanner. Don't know that person?
Who did Beatrice Stellar Tanner
into? Her better, she's
right?
better known by her stage name, Mrs. Patrick Campbell.
Okay.
Yeah, didn't know anyway. She she was very good friends with George Bernard Shaw, and she was the originator of the role of Eliza Doolittle in Pygmalion.
Ah, she was in Pygmalion.
Yes, that was a long way to get there. Wasn't it?
Yeah, but that was interesting.
It was.
I thought you were eating a big, yeah.
Yeah, usually it's only one or two steps to find out what the hell's going on.
That but was worth
it. I fished you in there. So we're going to jump all the way 200 years to 1966. It is the death anniversary of Sophie Tucker. She died at 82. Yeah, she did lots of things, like a lot of the Ziegfeld Follies stuff.
I was like, she was a Follies gal, wasn't she?
There was a whole bunch of people that died on this date, people that I didn't know, but there was a lot. Robert Atkins, Alice Delcia, who did work with Noel Coward, your friend. But we're going to jump to 1984. I was just a young person.
84 was a good year. 84 had good movies, good music, good times.
Was there a good musical that opened in 1984?
I'm sure there was. Are you going to tell us about it, Lisa?
Well, I'm going to give you a hint and let you tell the people.
Oh, I believe it was One Candor and Ebb, right?
It was.
Would it be about a rink?
It would.
Yeah, that's my Liza Minnelli and Chita Rivera.
It did. You got it all.
The rink.
You got all the pertinent information right there. So
although Liza didn't play a lot of those shows, Dr. Channing, her understudy, got to play a lot because Liza had a little cocaine issue that time.
Well, there you go.
1984.
1988, Carol Churchill's Serious Money opened up. It only ran 15 performances at the Royal Theater. It starred Alec Baldwin and Kate Nelligan. I
remember that. You know, now that you say all this, I remember this blip in time, but I didn't see it.
I didn't either. But I did work on Cloud Nine by Carol Churchill, if that counts.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Oh, we got to get moving. This is the 2016, the world premiere of John Patrick Shanley's Prodigal Son. Opened up at Manhattan Theater Club. And finally, 2017... Glenn Close came back to Sunset Boulevard.
Didn't get to wear a lot of her same costumes.
It is the birthday of Judith Light, Tom Hiddleston, Montego Glover, Carol King, Mia Farrow, Carmen Miranda, amongst others.
I was obsessed with Carmen Miranda as a child, by the way.
Well, who wasn't?
Yeah.
So we're going to take a little break and come back with our final interview with City Theater. Let's listen to Wallflower from the Rink. Here it is.
Oh, yay.
Never be a wallflower sitting in a chair up against the wall.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole, but now you just got Lisa. We're going to jump right into our interview with Andy Burkowski of City Theater and talking about the show he's doing this weekend that I will be at. Here's Andy. Here in the Zoom machine, we have Andy Burkowski of the City Theater. Welcome back, Andy.
Thank you so much for having me.
Woo! Yes. So we're very happy to see that City Theater is once again producing live and in person. And
I am shaking my head yes for the radio listeners because they can't see that.
So you are doing a show called Moments, which is a musical celebration of Stephen Sondheim.
Who's Stephen Sondheim?
Who is this man are celebrating?
So tell us about this show.
Well, to get us rolling into 2022 over at Trinity Playhouse, we were, developing our schedule for the next couple of months. That's kind of our home away from home over at Trinity Playhouse. We had got Ideal Husband that's going to be happening, and then over to Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. And we saw
Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
Yes, you should be. The cast is very frightening. So we thought about why not start the 22-22 season with a salute to, one of the best musical composers that we have lived with, his passing in November, which was tragic, which was, heartbreaking. And it's something that we've wanted to do for many years, and the stars just aligned with the show. At this time to do it. So for many reasons, as far as, what's happening with COVID and space being available, and we've been over to Trinity Playhouse and done a few shows at the end of 2021. So I do have the system down protocol wise to be able to bring people in a live theater situation, which is great. So everything was aligning, and especially with when I started asking performers who wanted to be a part of it, they had availability, which was wonderful.
Isn't that nice when that all works out?
Yeah, especially with something like this, where we wanted to start with six or seven and maybe each do two or three songs. And when you start asking, folks who are just veterans of musical theater, whether they've done something with us, over or at Zilker or Zach or Georgetown or at the Palace, it was just working. So we ended up we're going to have 12 performers and maybe one or two guests that do one or two songs. So
can you tell us who some of the performers are?
I can. Let me think of Wendy Zavalita, Michelle Chaney, Rick Falcons, Buddy Novak, Jim Lindsay, Scott Papal, Tracy Hurd, Susan Johnston Taylor. Oh, who did I miss? Matt Sheed is one of the performers. And Libby Dees and Leslie Vandergeist. I think that's how you say her last name.
Wonderful. Well, great people.
I can't believe you did all of those off the cuff that. It's impressive.
Well, you say it was off the cuff. He actually wrote them on the cuff of his trousers. So tell us some of your favorite songs that are going to be heard.
Oh, Lordy. I mean, we did Into the Woods. We've done some little stuff by him, but our only big production that we've done by him was Into the Woods, which we did.
I saw it.
And so we are doing a medley of two or three of those songs, Moment in the Woods, It Takes Two. We have Wendy Zavalita has been working hard on her Last Midnight for that. So there'll be a couple of songs from there. We're running the gamut, but it's a lot of songs from Company and Follies, the classics, that the ones that folks know.
Yeah, what are you doing from Follies?
because a lot of people are not as familiar with Follies as his other work.
Broadway Baby.
Yeah.
I'm Still Here.
Lovely.
Losing My Mind. I think Losing
I was
my
like,
mind
Losing My Mind. Please tell me you're doing Losing My Mind. I love
yeah,
it.
Yeah, Losing My Mind. And we're going to do a little gender bending with some of those, you know, with some of those songs. It's been, the challenge has been that there's, you know, so many of those songs, like some of the ones I just mentioned, are so, they're very, very emotional and dark, you know, but very heartfelt. To not make this an evening of just this sad, you know.
There's some happy songs in Follies. That whole
right, no, exactly.
So, is like Lucy and Jesse.
Yeah, well, yeah, we're correct. Right. There are. Yeah. It's, well, we found like you know, doing Free from Evening Primrose. It's a, you know, upbeat song. Or doing like It Takes Two from Into the Woods. What's an, oh, like gotta have it, you know, we're going a little bit in the narrative, we're going a little bit further back into some of the stuff we just did lyrics for. So like doing Gotta Have a Gimmick from Gypsy, you know, is, you know, one of those songs. So we, you know, have that a good combination. So it's again a salute of where he started at, where he ended up, you know.
Awesome.
All day I'm gonna be like, you can that's going to be in my head all day. Thank you,
good
Andy. Thanks
good.
A lot, Andy Perkowski. So when does
that's
this show happen?
Was born, honey.
When does this show happen?
February 10th through the 13th. That's the week coming up.
And where can folks go to get more information?
You can go to citytheateraustin.org.
Awesome.
Citytheateraustin.org.
And you mentioned that, you know, you've gotten used to working there at Trinity Playhouse, and you feel confident that you can bring people in safety. What are the COVID mitigation procedures that people should expect?
You have to be masked to come into the, because for folks who don't know, the Playhouse is on the fourth floor of First Baptist Church, Austin. So masks are required to enter the building. Going up to the fourth floor. Then we are requiring vaccinations from everybody for the show, you know.
Okay. And is that two vaccinations or vaccinations and a booster?
We're going to go. That's a good question. And that's something we've been talking about. I would say that probably both the two vaccinations will be where we kind of do the, you know, the minimum. You know, we'll play that by ear, but vaccinations will be required.
Well, let's just
go ahead.
I just want to make sure that our listeners know that the vaccinations are required. And currently here in Austin and nationwide, the fully vaccinated is just two at this point. They haven't changed it to boosted. So that makes a lot of sense.
That's where my head was, right? And for people who are listening here, it's the Trinity Playhouse. It seats about 90, but we're doing limited seating for that reason. So there will be social distancing, you know, in the seating when you do come in. So we're doing seating for about maybe 40 to 50 people in the
awesome way. Wonderful. And I should tell folks, if you've not been to Trinity Theater before, it's really wonderful. It may be a little daunting because it's downtown, but there's plenty of parking on the street and in a parking garage nearby. Andy Berkowski, quickly,
they have that little parking garage like across the street, so
correct,
not as crazy.
It's not crazy at all.
And there's very parking on Sundays on the church block, so
excellent. We can't mention Free. Thanks a lot. Now we have to redo this whole thing. I'm teasing. You're fine with Free parking. In our last minute, and very, very briefly, can you had mentioned that you're doing shows coming up, which is An Ideal Husband and Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. When are those take place?
Ideal Husband follows moments right after that, the 18th through March 13th over at Trinity Playhouse. And the dates for Virginia Woolf, I believe, are April 13th through May 1st.
I'm going to say April 15th through May 1st, according to your website.
That's exactly right. April 5th, 3 weeks over at Trinity, starting in the spring over there.
Wonderful. Well, Andy Berkowski, we love having you on. We'll probably get you on for An Ideal Husband with maybe some of your cast members.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. I want you so-
fall. It's like I'm losing my mind.
Well, that's just about it for us today. We just have a couple of more minutes that you can hear the dulcet tones of me, Lisa Sheps. We'll be back next week. We are pre-recording next week's show, so it won't be as topical as normal because we've got to get everything done on Sunday. So join us then. Hopefully we'll have another episode in our series on longstanding theaters. I'm hoping to talk to Ken Webster of Hyde Park Theater and learn all about the history of Hyde Park Theater and everything it's going through and everything it's going to be doing. So thank you guys. We'll see you next week when Nicole and I look at what's happening off stage and on the air. DJ Mark is set up to go into Texas Music Mixtape. We'll see you, folks.